Good evening, everybody. This is Chris Emmanuel of MMA UK, and welcome to the second episode of the new Late Late Show. This evening, we're going to be talking about the MMA action from this weekend, with UFC having UFC on Fox 31, which was their last event on the Fox network before they moved to ESPN. Joining me tonight will be James Hamilton. So, hello, James.
How's it going, guys?
How are you doing? You well?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Good. Ready to roll. Ready to go.
Excellent. And we've also got Frankie Anderson. How are you, Frankie?
Hi. I'm just trying to get Giannis on.
He's just ruined my big reveal there. And we also have the dulcet tones of Lewis Smith. Hi, Lewis.
Yes, boys. How's it going?
Lewis, where's your tie?
Not on tonight, but I'm going for a more casual look.
You promised us a tie last week.
It'll have to be next week now, all right? I promise I'm for next week.
Is your mum washing your tie for school tomorrow?
No, that was actually a rugby tie, James. Finished school now for the summer, for Christmas, I should say. Yeah, I'm going to come back until after Christmas now, the tie, but I'll make an exception next week for Chris.
Excellent, thank you very much. Well, we are due to be joined by a celebrity guest star, Giannis Fleming, a.k.a. Mr. Sport, but Giannis is having a few technical issues at the moment. I think perhaps he's used up all the internet in Fanit. We're trying to get him back on at the moment, but as soon as he's available, he'll join us. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with talking about the UFC event whilst we're trying to get Giannis on to tell us about what he's up to. So, guys, UFC on Fox 31. May as well start talking about the main event, Raging Ally Quinta versus the Motown Phenom, Kevin Lee. Lewis, we start with you. What are your opinions on the fight?
Really good fight. Obviously, we saw him fight before and Ally Quinta got the win there. We saw it again this weekend and once again, Al did the business. I thought he looked really good. His boxing looked great. Really close fight. Like I said, I had it 2-2 going into the last round, which Al obviously took that last round. But yeah, I really enjoyed the fight. I think it shows, you know, people thought, I think when Al fought Khabib, people kind of said that, you know, Khabib wasn't up to scratch, but I think it just shows how skillful Ally Quinta is. He's, you know, he's got really good defense on the ground and really good stand-up. I thought he really did have Lee's number standing up. So, yeah, I was happy with the decision. I gave it 3-2. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what's next for Al in that division now.
Yeah, I completely agree. So James, Al obviously had a 7-inch reach disadvantage to Kevin Lee, yet completely controlled the stand-up, keeping Kevin at a distance with his jab throughout most of the fight. So what did you think?
Well, reach advantage only comes into play if you actually can use the reach advantage well. So if Al obviously negated that reach advantage. So the fight kind of, I fancied Al for this fight. I know, just to jump on something Lewis said there about Khabib not being on his game, I think Al's got a habit of doing that to guys, of taking them out of their game. And I think Al now, he's got to be considered a contender. With Khabib's issues as well, I think, what do you think about possibly Al and Tony Ferguson? I think that's a matchup that makes sense.
Okay, well, obviously, Kevin Lee had quite a catastrophic reaction to the loss, kneeling in the cage, close to tears. Lewis, where do you think Kevin goes from here?
It's a tough one, really. I mean, I don't think it's... I know he was pretty distraught after it, but I don't think it's as bad as all that. You know, it was a loss, but it wasn't a loss where he looked really bad or he got knocked out. It just was where it was. It was two rounds to two, and then he lost that last round. I think maybe he got a little bit tired and Al picked up the pace. So I don't think it's devastating. You know, I don't know, how old is Kevin Lee? 24, 25? He's still pretty young. Yeah, he's very young. So, I don't think it's not the end of the world sort of thing. I think he'll learn a lot from that. I think he'll come back. I mean, you look at that lightweight division at the moment and it is absolutely unreal. I think it's most likely the most deep division I've ever seen since I've been following UFC. You know, you've got three champions in there, really, with McGregor, Khabib and Tony Ferguson. And then you've got like six or seven guys below that who's just all absolutely brilliant fighters. So it's a tough division to be in. But I still think, you know, another win and Kevin Lee's still back in title contention. So I don't think it's terrible. I think he'll go back to the drawing board, train a little bit. In terms of his next opponent, I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, potentially Gaethje, someone like that, will be a good matchup. But yeah, I think I think we've not seen the last of Kevin Lee. And obviously then you've got the talk of the 65-pound division next year, which, you know, he seems like a good fit to go up to that potentially as well. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of options for Kevin Lee. I'm a very big fan of Kevin Lee, but last night it was just one of those things. It was a close loss and wasn't his night.
Yeah, completely agree. So, well, obviously, Kevin, he lost to Tony Ferguson, beat Edson Barbosa. Diego Barbosa is a British featherweight, so bigging him up a little bit too early in his career for that. And then lost to Ali Akinter. So he's 1-2 in his last three now, Kevin Lee. So I think he's probably got a little bit of rebuilding to do. And as you said, it is an incredibly deep division. You've got Khabib at the top, Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, no one's even talking about really at the moment.
Yeah.
Kevin Lee was ranked fourth, Barbosa fifth, Gaethje sixth. It's just an absolute talent pool. So, okay, moving on to the next fight then, which involved another lightweight clash, Edson Barbosa versus Dan Hooker. So Barbosa came into this ranked fifth, Dan Hooker 14th. Hooker had come in actually as a betting favourite after winning four on the spin. James, what did you make of this?
It's a great fight. I think it showed Edson Barbosa at his fiercest as well. Obviously, one thing we saw from Dan Hooker was toughness, but Edson, I thought Edson looked great. Everything was thrown with bad intentions. I felt like possibly the fight maybe could have ended a wee bit. I think Hooker was maybe a wee bit too tough for his own good, and he took a lot of punishment. But it was surprising that Hooker came in as a favourite to me. Obviously, I know he was on a good win streak, but that was a big shock to me. I felt like Edson should have been the favourite going into that fight. And obviously, he showed why. Everything he throws with bad intentions. Obviously, there's a counter side of that, which is he does tend to fatigue in his fights. And he did look like he was slowing down a wee bit in the fight, but I think he'd done enough damage at the start of the fight to the body and the legs that ultimately that set up the finish. But I thought Edson looked great, as always. And Dan Hooker, I don't think there was a loser in that fight. I think Dan Hooker came out that fight, probably won quite a few fans as well from the performance.
Well, I think you brought up two strong points there, actually. So, Lewis, you know, I'm not sure which one you want to take. You take one and maybe James will take the other. But okay. So there's the conversation around the toughness of Dan Hooker. Last week we had Brian Ortega in a very similar position where, you know, the fight was lost. But he kept going until he was forced to stop. Same with Hooker in this fight. A few weeks ago, we did have Duke Rufus throw the towel in for Anthony Pettis. You know, potentially, is that something we should see more of? Do you think referees should step in earlier to stop people taking punishment when they are at the point when, you know, the fight can't continue? What are your thoughts on that?
It's very tricky, isn't it? I mean, the problem is you see guys taking a beating, but then you have fighters like Darren Elkins who can take a beating and then still come back and win. So that's always going to be the argument, this fight is saying, well, I was taking a beating, but I was still in there. I was still able to win. So coaches are always going to be a little bit hesitant to stop it too soon, I think. I mean, for me, I think the fight is safety is paramount, but I think ultimately the responsibility lies with the ref. You know, if the ref thinks it's too bad, then, you know, he should be calling to stop it before the corners really get a chance. Like I said, I think with big level fights like that, I think the fighters and the coaches are always going to feel like they're in it to win it. And as long as they're still there, they can pull something off. I mean, how many times do you see fighters getting dropped and then pulling off a submission or something? You know, these things happen in MMA. And it would be nice to kind of see, you know, maybe corners being a bit more, I don't know how to say it really, just a bit more active in stopping it. But at the same time, I can see why they don't. So, yeah, I think it's more down to the refs to stop the fights when they guess the beating gets too much. I mean, Hooker, he's so tough. I saw as well, like, they were saying Dana White went in after him and he was just more upset about losing the fight than he was about any sort of injuries he had. So these guys are tough. They do it for a living. And I think it's more down to the ref to get in there personally.
Excellent. Well, guys, as you might have just noticed, we have a new caller on the line. Welcome to Sport. You've managed to find some internet capacity down there in FN, have you?
I'm trying to plug the headphones in, so I do apologize, guys. It wasn't working on my phone, so I've literally just booted up the PC now.
Excellent, good work. Well, it's good timing. We're just talking about the Edson Barbosa versus Dan Hooker fight from the weekend. Lewis has just given his overview on the toughness of fighters. Should fights be stopped early? Should a corner throw in a towel, or should the referee should the referees have a little bit more autonomy to stop fights when they see fighters are taking too much punishment and just probably too tough to stop? What are your thoughts on that as somebody sits on the outside of the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. You know, obviously, if someone is taking punishment, you know, then it's probably best to call off the fight. But I have been to a few events where it does create almost animosity between the crowd. It's quite a touchy subject, isn't it? Because some people could argue, you know, if a fighter is able to fight, it's quite a subjective thing, isn't it? You know, some people might say I was in a position to be able to carry on, and others might say the opposite. So yeah, it is a tough one to call, but I think, you know, I think it's something that has to be done for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, Frankie, you... Sorry,
yeah,
James.
That's me, yeah. Sorry, Chris, you're going to say this.
No, wrong person, wrong Scotsman. James, you you also touched on Edson Barbosa's fight IQ, and I think that's quite a salient point. Barbosa, as you said, he fights at 100 miles an hour and he throws everything with absolute bad intentions, which sometimes gets him into trouble because he just gasses far too quickly. You know, I'll be blunt. Do you think he has fight IQ? Do you think that he's going to be a gatekeeper for the division? Because, as we said earlier, it's a stacked division. And where can he go with this win?
Yeah, obviously, it's hard for him to change his style of fighting because it's got him so far. But one thing in the fight, he did make a mistake in the grappling. And he allowed Dan Hooker, who we've seen in the past, has got some good submissions. So he did give Dan Hooker a chance in that fight where he was controlling it. I think Edson, unfortunately, if he wants to be up there contesting with Khabib and like that, he has to make adjustments that he doesn't seem to have made yet. It's tricky whether he can change that style, because he throws everything with so much power. In a 5-round fight, he's always going to have issues. And when he gets fatigued, mistakes come into play, and that's where Edson gets in trouble against the top guys. Like I say, he made a mistake in there with Dan Hooker. He got away with it. Not that Dan Hooker's not a great fighter, but we've got to remember he is ranked 14th, so he isn't up there in the top 1, 2, 3, 4 guys. So if Edson ever has eyes on being champion, he has to make those adjustments. If not, unfortunately, I think he's going to always be a fan favourite. He's going to be a guy people want to see fight, but he's never going to hold a belt in the UFC. That's just my opinion. He has to make those changes if he ever wants to be up there. And even with those changes, I think it's still a big ask for him to go in there and compete with really high-level grapplers, because that has been his Achilles heel.
Well, Edson has made the move now to ATT. He's followed his long-time coach from New Jersey or New York down to Florida. So do you think that will benefit him in the future?
I don't know, because I would look at the coach that he had in New Jersey, Mark Henry. I rate him as one of the best in the world. Do I think he's going to get better down at AT or progress more than he did with Mark Henry? That's up for debate, but I don't always like guys changing camps. I know he's followed a coach down there. I don't know how much that will benefit him. I honestly think Mark Henry was the guy for him, but we can only look at his fights. Since it's going to take a wee bit of time, I think it's hard to judge him in his first camp at ATT. I think he's going to take a wee bit longer, but we can only wait and see. Personally, I think Mark Henry's one of the best in the world, and we'll see what happens, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
For me, can I jump in on that one? Because I don't think it's a bad thing for him to go to a different camp, purely because I think he'd done everything he could have done with Mark Henry, although he was fighting really well. I don't know if there was anything more. You know, we saw him get mauled by Khabib, and that's another case for, you know, should fights get stopped. He got absolutely mauled by Khabib, but, you know, was too tough for his own good, kept going. Same against Kevin Lee as well. I think with Edson, perhaps it's just a change of scenery that he needed to maybe put himself back on the horse. Like you said, he is a little bit of a gatekeeper now because there's just so many good guys. But I would hope that, you know, a bit of a change of scenery, extra work on his grappling, and maybe he can push on to bigger things. It's going to be tough for him now, though, I think, at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I didn't, just to jump back in there, I mean, obviously it is his first camp in the new gym, but I don't know what you saw in the fight. I didn't see really a different Edson Barboza in there. I saw the same guy that's going, throwing everything full clip, trying to knock you out early. I didn't really see anything too different, but maybe there were small nuances in the fight that I missed. That's highly possible, but yeah, I guess time will tell on that one.
He fights as if he's playing UFC 2. my little girl loves UFC 2 now, so we go on regularly. She fights as Ronda Rousey, so I just beat the living daylights out of her just out of principle. And she always button mashes, so she comes forward and she says, bash, 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 bash. Energy bar goes down, and then all of a sudden she's right for the taking. And that looked like if Hooker had just a little bit more energy, or, you know, a little bit left in his stanky legs, then it could have been the same for Edson Barboza, I think, on Saturday night. Yanis, do you have any thoughts on fighters changing camp?
Changing camp, as in what? Mm. From a disloyalty perspective, or from a training perspective? Because I suppose two different things, aren't there?
Yeah, very much so. I'd say from a professionalism perspective, you know, at the end of the day, a fighter's career is finite. There's only a certain amount of time that they can reach the upper echelons where they can earn the big money. So if they need to make adjustments, if they've got to the point where they've exhausted the knowledge of the people around them, or they've got too comfortable within their home environments, do you think that it's what are your thoughts on you know, the movement? Do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, or?
I think it can be a good thing. I mean, I understand that MMA, kind of like other combat sports, is quite it's almost quite a personal sport. You know, going in there and putting everything on the line physically against another human is different to something like football or tennis, for example. But you still have to understand it's a sport, and if you are wanting to reach the higher, you know, the pinnacle of your sport, and you feel like your camp can't supply that for you, then there's no harm in. I certainly don't think there's any disloyalty there. I mean, imagine fighters from, you know, from another country, for example. They tend to train over here in the UK or over in the States, and there's no qualms there, is there? You know, they're not gonna. What do you expect them to do? Train in a, you know, in the slum somewhere where they may not have the coaching, and they may not have the facilities. So no, I don't see an issue with that at all. We do it; they do it in other sports. If you're talking about changing gyms, you know, from a, you know, almost like a TJ Dillashaw perspective, it's a tough one, isn't it? You're asking some tough questions tonight for me, Greg.
It's your own fault for coming in late, because I was going to start with you. So now you're getting hit with all the general MMA stuff, but you're holding your own, my man. You're holding your own, don't worry. And I think that's a good answer. Well, what I'm going to do, because I don't really want to push this too far, and I think we've had some good commentary here. I'm going to move on to the third fight of the evening, and I'm going to drop Frankie straight into the mix here. The third from the top was Sergio Pettis versus Rob Font. So we had Sergio Pettis, who's ranked number 2 as a flyweight, against Rob Font, who was number 10 bantamweight in the UFC at that point. Before the fight, Rob Font said, "I don't respect him as a bantamweight." So obviously,
I'm assuming by Frankie,
you mean James? Aye. There's a few questions and comments coming in as well. So
right. Well, I'll give you quickly my thoughts on that fight. I actually think Rob Font was on the money with what he said. Sergio, unfortunately, looks custom built for flyweight. He just doesn't look big enough. And you would think that maybe coming up, he would have a lot of the speed advantage and stuff, but Rob Font's jab was so fast. It was causing problems all night. I think the size came into play. I think Pettis is too small for the division. Unfortunately, the division he should be fighting in doesn't exist. So it leaves him in a pretty shitty position. I don't see him doing anything at bantamweight. There's guys that are better than Font in that division. But Rob Font looked really good. Jab was on point. Obviously, when he got on top, he controlled him. I felt it was apart from a few things, it was a pretty comfortable victory for Font.
Lewis, between the second and third round, Duke Rufus said to Sergio Pettis, "You've got to stop being so technical. We just need to go out and actually make it a bit more of a war." He didn't seem to do this. Do you think that would have made a difference?
To be honest, no. I just agree with what James said. He looks custom built for flyweight, and that division just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, he came up against a bigger guy, and he got beat up. Unfortunately, you know, Rob Font, he's throwing that jab out there, looked really fast, got the takedowns at will. It was. I don't want to say it was an easy win, but it was. He looked pretty comfortable, I thought, Rob Font. And you know, honestly, Sergio. The problem is with Sergio, he is a technical fighter. So when you're going to say go out there and do something that you're not used to, all that's going to end up is I think he's going to most likely end up getting knocked out or submitted. So I don't think it would have made any difference. I think that probably would have ended up being the worst thing he could have done, simply because he's not. You know, if it's like a Robbie Lawler type of character who can go out there and brawl, then fair play, send him out there to do that. But if you've got a guy who's, you know, he's a technical fighter, like his brother, you know, they're great strikers, great jiu-jitsu players, and, you know, they play the game the way they know how. So it's always going to be tough to kind of expect something different from him. I can't see what Rufus was saying, you know, you're not winning the fight this way, we got to try and switch it up. But at the same time, I think there's better ways to do it than just kind of throw caution to the wind and go out there and get yourself hurt. That's just me, though. I mean, there's probably going to be equal amount of people who's going to say, you know, when the chips are down, a fight to fight, so you got to get in there. But for me, I would say, you know, you're better off kind of making your game plans and going through those. But when you're just outmatched in the size, like, when he fights in that division now. So, yes, it's a tough position for Sergio to be in. I don't know really what he's going to do. Obviously, is he going to stay in bantamweight? Is he going to switch to another promotion? It's a tough spot for him and for a lot of other flyweights as well, I think. I don't know what your thoughts on this whole situation is, but for me, it's pretty sad that they're looking like they're going to get rid of a whole division of fighters.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually. So if the number two contender is struggling that badly against the number 10 contender at bantamweight, you know, do you think that other than, you know, Henry Cejudo aside, can you think of another former flyweight who will survive in the bantamweight division? You know, not just in the upper echelons, but just, you know, floating around the midsection. Do you think they've got a future?
There probably will be some guys who manage to pull it through, guys who are bigger for the weight class. But like James said, I mean, Sergio looks like he's a flyweight. He doesn't look like a bantamweight. So someone like that, and like we said, someone who is a technical fighter, I think he's going to struggle. And I think it's going to be the same for a lot of guys. I think there will be guys, I can't think of names off the top of my head, but there will be guys who will probably slot in and mix it up with the bantamweights. But it's a big ask at this point. And not only that, but it's a big ask for guys coming through now, because you've got a lot of guys fighting at flyweight in, you know, places like Cage Warriors, other organizations of that level, who's been aiming for the UFC. Now that's gone, where are these guys going to go? It's a pretty strange situation, I think.
Well, we have that situation with Nathan Grayson, who held the Cage Warriors flyweight title. But it has been announced today that he's got a fight at bantamweight on Bellator Newcastle on the 9th of February. So, there is some opportunity for them. But, you know, certainly the smaller guys in the division, because Grayson was huge for that division anyway.
Yeah.
You know, bearing in mind that Sam Creasy is a big guy, he looked massive against Sam. I think there's certainly going to be a market for another global promotion to pick up a whole division of stars if they put their hand in their pocket.
Do you not think as well, though, that I don't know why it is, but it seems like the smaller guys like flyweights, they seem to be more appreciated out in Asia and the promotions out there, as opposed to promotions maybe in Europe and North America. It seems they're sort of appreciated a bit more out there, I think, just from an outsider looking in. It seems like that anyway.
I think they're probably quite used to having, you know, a lot of the fighters are actually that size naturally anyway. Yeah. You know, if you look at the average size of a male across the Far East in comparison to the average size of a male across Central to Western Europe, you know, there's a clear disparity. So, you know, if you get someone who's fighting at 125, they are relatively the norm. You know, in comparison, certainly to a 205, you don't get a huge amount of 205ers coming out of the Far East, apart from the sumo guys, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for promotions like Brave FC and stuff like that. Obviously, one FC have got Demetrius. It's a good opportunity for those guys to pick up some lighter weight, especially Brave FC. I think they could really do something if they looked at bringing in the smaller guys and creating a nice division over there.
Well, I think there's probably a fair few. It's dependent on the finances, though. You know, you look at Road FC out in Korea. You know, they've certainly got a bit of money behind them. They've got £1 million tournament coming to its fruition shortly with Tunisian guy who used to be in Bama, Mansour Banoui, fighting in the final. So there's probably some cash there. They have a relatively decent flyweight division for the area, certainly. You've got EFC out in South Africa. They've got a growing flyweight division with some stars there, actually. Demar Pena is certainly an upcoming star in Africa. So it depends really what the UFC guys have been paid. Because, you know, what I've noticed since the UFC has been purchased by the private equity firm, they're just acting very much like a private equity company rather than acting like a sports promotion. They're cutting costs. They've looked at the flyweight division, which was essentially a loss leader. It was never going to be a division which would headline a show and sell them pay-per-views. If Demetrius Johnson can't do it, then no one in that division can do it. So, you know, it made perfect sense for them as a private equity company just to cut that entire division and put their resources elsewhere, which in cheaper markets, you know, essentially like the women's flyweight division, which probably cost them 10% of what the male flyweight division did in terms of wages. So, it's really interesting times in MMA at the moment.
I was disappointed, to be honest, because, like you said, from a business perspective, I can see that makes sense. But I think from just the sports perspective, it's quite narrow-sighted. Obviously, it's not selling out big pay-per-views now, but, you know, 3-4 years down the line, if you get a few stars come through in that division, it's a whole new ball game. You know, what was the featherweight division before Conor McGregor came along? There was no one headlining that. And now, all of a sudden, that division is absolutely booming. So I think I think it is narrow-minded in that perspective because, you know, we look at the UFC as the leading kind of light in the sport, and they've now got rid of a division, which I think is a bit disappointing personally.
I think you're right from a sports perspective, but you've got to take into account what the UFC actually is now. It's not a sports promotion; it's a private equity company. They paid $4.2 billion for it. Now, private equity companies normally sell out in 3 to 5 years, and they'll want to make a return on investment, and that return on investment won't come if they invest in a division which could take 5, 6, 7 years to come to fruition and earn them some money. You know, it's certainly interesting times now to see who's going to take over that mantle as the premier sports promotion, essentially, in global MMA, because the UFC doesn't seem to be interested in being the premier sports promotion. They seem to be interested in being the most profitable sports promotion in mixed martial arts. And I think there's quite a clear distinction between the two, but I think we probably have a whole new podcast on that. And I'm conscious of the fact that I've kept Frankie, got it right, waiting on the questions. And we've got Yanis on the line to talk about some of his expertise as well. So if I'm going to head over to Frankie now and say, what have we got on the Facebook machine?
Right, first we've got to get this out of the way. Peter Knox is asking, why is James wearing kids' Xbox headphones?
Hello, Peter. On the way home from the gym, I saw a child standing with him, so I jumped out of the car and took them off him.
I don't think you should admit that online, James.
I just had them afraid, mate. I beat up children at night.
Right, and let's see. Chris Scadden is asking, are you guys excited for the return of John Jones?
I'm excited for the return of John Jones and Gustafsson.
Yeah.
Don't know so much about just John Jones. I'm excited for that fight, but I'm not the biggest John Jones fan. Seems like a bit of an asshole, but he's a fantastic fighter, so I'm looking forward to seeing him fighting, especially against Gustafsson. A few years too late for me, but I'm excited about that.
I'm looking forward to both, to be honest. I think it's a great fight, and he's a great fighter, so I think it's going to be brilliant to see him back. I mean, regardless of what you think of him, he's a big draw, isn't he? So it's going to be good to see him back in the main event.
I'm a huge John Jones fan. And I, do you know what? In the same way as the Conor Nuthuggers just don't care what he does, I'm the same with John Jones. Could not care less what he does because I absolutely love seeing him in the cage. Probably the most complete mixed martial artist for me. It doesn't matter where a fight goes. He tries to beat people at their own game. It's just... It isn't. I was going to use the word phenomenal then, but I used it about 10 times last week, so I'm not going to. It's just fantastic to watch.
Who's your pick for that fight, Chris?
Oh, got to be Jon Jones.
Yeah,
it's got to be.
I thought he might say that.
I don't think Gus has improved from where he is, and I think Jones on a decent camp ruins Gus.
John Gustafson's not improved. Oh God, I don't know about that.
Yeah, he looked good against Teixeira last time.
He looked damn good.
I thought Teixeira just looked worse.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong to that. I think Gus has improved. We'll see what happens. I mean, you can only go in some of John Jones's fights as well. He didn't look great against OSP. But
no, he didn't, to be fair.
It's definitely going to be a fun fight.
Yanis, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both. Like you said, John Jones, he's the one that I certainly grew up with when I was watching MMA, you know, certainly when I was taking part in MMA. That's who I watched quite closely, actually. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to sort of get him back in there. I think he beats Gustafsson personally. But what do I know, you know? I'm just a food guy.
Before we go to the next question, though, I just want to say a big hello to Chris Gadden. Chris is one of the guys who puts a lot of time and money into UK MMA, travelling around the country, supporting fighters, going to local shows. So, hi, Chris, and thanks for the question.
And this leads us into the next one. This is for MMA Funny. Could Mr. Sport help DC with his next weight cut against Brock?
for sure. I mean, the guy's quite short anyway, isn't he? For that, you know, he's for that weight division anyway. He's quite a short fighter anyway, isn't he? So he probably doesn't need my help cutting weight. But if he does, I'm here.
That's all the questions anyway. I'll get some on later.
Okay, well, brilliant. Well, that leads us into what was going to be the opening part of our show. Welcome to Mr. Sport, Yanis Fleming. So in the space of probably two and a half years, Yanis has gone from being somebody who is relatively unknown on the MMA scene across Europe and certain parts of America to someone who's now certainly hitting the top of his profession as probably the most well-known nutritionist in the mixed martial arts world this side of the pond anyway. So thank you for joining us today, Yanis. I know that you've got quite a lot on your busy schedule, but there's quite a few people who wanted to just get to know you a bit better and get an understanding around where you came from, where you are, how you've got to where you are now, and then we'll move on from there. So if you could just give us a brief overview of how you started in the sport and where you got to where you are.
For sure. Yeah, thank you for having me, guys. So just like every story, it starts with an education. So that's what happened. I went away. I went to uni. I went to college. I did all of that stuff. Learned primarily about sports science, learned a bit about nutrition. I don't know if you've seen what's going on in the nutrition world lately, if any of you follow anything to do with food and whatnot, but there's a lot of fads going around, if you hadn't noticed. You know, there's a lot of booty and skinny coffee and rubbish like that. So I think what I wanted to do when I first started was bring a fresh, balanced outlook back to the nutrition industry. And I think that really resonated quite well with people, and things just kicked off from there. In terms of the MMA side, it was only from my own experiences, personal experiences with jiu-jitsu tournaments and a couple of interclubs where I had some terrible weight cuts, that I sort of stumbled across this niche, if you like. You know, there wasn't a certification in this area of nutrition, and it was sort of a free-for-all. You know, I was watching people use crazy, drastic methods in order to make weight. And I had gone through it myself as well. And it was only by chance, really, where I actually decided to educate myself a bit more on it that, as I said, I stumbled across this niche. Things just kicked off, you know. I want to say it's all me, you know. I've applied as much as I can. But the truth is, a sport like MMA, in my eyes, was almost 20 years behind in terms of sports science. So for me to come along and just apply some science to it, you know, I want to take all of the credit, but it was a bit of both. You know, the sport where certainly three, four, five years ago, it's come a long way since, you know, certainly with the rise of like Conor McGregor. So that's sort of where my journey started, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, like you said, Chris.
Well, I first came across you when you started working with Alan Philpott. So I remember seeing Alan fighting. He's always, he's obviously the nickname The Apprentice. He's always a talented kid and he was tough. But there's just something missing from his game. The first fight that he worked with him was the Shea Walsh fight, which unfortunately ended with the illegal knee to the head. But beforehand, he was absolutely lighting up, one of the toughest guys in UK MMA at that point. Yeah. Could you just give us a run through of how you changed Alan's perception, around, you know, what he was eating, what he was doing, how you made him that, you added that extra, you know, couple of percent to his game?
Yeah, I think the main thing with Alan, obviously, you know, there was the food, there was the way that we did the weight cut properly, and the way we rehydrated and refueled properly. But the thing with Alan was that I think he had a lot of stress that he wasn't going to make weight, a lot of worries about not even making weight because he had had a couple of times where he failed to previously. So I was almost there to, you know, to shoulder him through it, you know, get him through that cut, and we did, and he even flew me out to Dublin for the fight, and, you know, it wasn't an easy process, but he did all of the right stuff, you know, he made the dietary adjustments, when we needed to taper things like carbohydrates down through fight week, we did that properly, we limited things like sodium to salt, and then from there, it made the cut so much easier. So for Alan, it wasn't a case of him, you know, him loving his food or him not being able to cut. I think it was more of a case of he just didn't know what he was doing. And then, you know, once I came along and sort of explained the process, it made it 10 times easier. But he was on fire that night, no doubt. And he's one of the most confident fighters I actually saw that night. And that was one of the first ones, like you said, Chris. And I haven't yet to see someone so confident with so much pressure, certainly in, I know it's from Northern Ireland, but in Dublin, in his own almost home country, there was a lot of pressure on him that night and he almost handled it well.
So how many fighters now have you helped through their weight cut?
What, on the books or this year, how many have I helped?
Both.
This year around probably just over 200 and something. Yeah, it's been quite an intense year.
How many have failed?
None. You know they don't know this.
Can I ask a question for Yanis?
Go on.
So we spoke a little bit earlier about coaches stepping in if they fight this game beat up too much. At what point is you're there and the nutritionist, you're going through the cut with them. At what point do you step in and say, look, it's not working, we got to call this off now and the fight is not going to make the weight? Is there a point you step in or is it tough for you to be in that position?
No, because it's a lot more calculated than that. It's not like the weight cutting is a number of variables that you just have to take control of. And if you take control of the variables, you're going to hit the numbers. With fighting and with taking a beating, there's just so many other variables that you can't account for, you know, like the someone fighting a certain way or, you know, you never know what's going to happen when there's two separate people in there. But in terms of weight cutting, as long as you're, you know, as long as you're doing the right things, you're going to get to the weight. If a fighter contacted me on fight week and said, oh, Yanis, we got 30 kilos to lose, then the likelihood is they're not going to make weight, are they? So I'm obviously going to have to say, sorry, mate, I can't help you, which I have done before. I have. But every single fighter that I've accepted and I've taken responsibility for with their weight cut, they've all made weight and they've all rehydrated and refueled effectively. It's a science. It's calculated. It's not subjective, you know?
Can I just ask as well, just on top of what Lewis is saying there, have you ever had a situation where you've had to say to a fighter what they're trying to do is unsafe or completely unrealistic? If they're trying to, a guy at a certain weight is trying to get so far down to, say, to get to a specific division, have you ever had to tell someone, listen, this is bad for your health? There's no way I can be involved in it without giving any names or anything. Is that something that's cropped up a few times or?
Yeah, for sure. That happens all the time because fighters leave cuts so late. Don't get me wrong, I'll take on a challenging cut, but I'm not willing to I'm not willing to potentially physically harm someone. You know, it's not about the Chris. It's not about the 100% weight cut record, bro. It's about the safety. And if I just think someone is gonna be, you know, be affected, even in terms of performance, if it means that their performance is going to drop and they're going to get, you know, bashed up badly, then I'm not interested in contributing towards that fight. So yeah, there have been times, but normally fighters will come to me 6 weeks out, 6 to 8 weeks out, maybe even longer, and then that gives me enough time to correct any potential damage if they are coming in a bit heavy, for example.
Thank you.
So what would you say differentiates you from your peers in your field then, Yanis?
What peers?
Okay, the dog trade diet. Go on.
I own that.
The other one. You're talking about the other one in America, that guy.
Yeah, that one. That one that people used to use.
Well, for starters, it's tough to say, isn't it? It's tough to say because we're all doing the same thing. We all come from similar background. I mean, one's a Marine, one's an ex-personal trainer or something. I come from science. I come from the holy grail of this stuff. Do you know what I'm saying? The thing that separates me, I think, is that I'm more calculated. Things are down to a T. It's not a guessing game. And, you know, you see fighters like, you see some of the big dogs not being able to make weight for their UFC bouts. I mean, that's just unheard of in my world with my fighters. And my fighters are fighting. I'm getting four or five fighters on one fight card, for example, you know, and every single one's making weight. So I just think just like we're probably heading into a new era of MMA with new champions and the sport's growing, I think so is the science side. And I think we've had ex-Marines, we've had personal trainers doing very precise scientific jobs for a while, and now things are changing. Things are changing. The industry's developing, isn't it? And that's, you know, that's how I feel about it. That's my unique selling point.
Old.
So, if you're going to name drop some people, then let's keep the fans happy. Who are you working with? Who's got fights coming up? Let's hear some names. I'm certain that we're going to mention a couple of people who were mentioned on a card that was released today.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Firstly, speaking about the John Jones card, I am working with Nathaniel Wood. You guys obviously would know who he is. He's fighting on that card. He's had a change of fight because it was Tom Duquesnoy, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So, yeah, that's exciting. He's on weight. He's, as always, professional as ever. He's going to be on weight. The guy is just, he lives this stuff. It's constant. But, yeah, Fabian Edwards, Aaron Chalmers. Still Alan Philpott, not sure what's going on with him at the moment. He's over in Aussie land. And just a whole bunch of others, you know, just people that are in the UK. I know the whole Bama division's gone now. So there's a lot of changes being made. Half of the fights I'm working with going to Cage Warriors, half are going to Bellator. So things are up in the air at the moment, but I know that Nathaniel, and then shortly after that in February, we've got Aaron and Fabian and potentially some others on that card.
So how on earth have you managed to get some guy who's a playboy on a reality-ish TV show into an elite athlete? What have you done with Aaron Chalmers?
Well, it weren't just me, was it? It weren't all me. I came after the first fight. It was weird how it happened, actually. It was on Instagram, his agent. By the way, it's a very, very, very strange story, but me and Aaron are actually signed to the same agency now. It's very, very strange. But you already knew this, Chris. You already knew this stuff. But, his agent followed me on Instagram, saw some sort of tips and whatnot I give out for fighters. And he dropped me a message and said, oh, I've got a fighter that would like a hand. And I thought, oh, okay, cool. Who's that? He sent me the name. And I honestly didn't think anything of it. I'll be honest, I don't watch Geordie Shore. I don't know any of that.
This is why we get on.
And then I saw, and someone said, Aaron Chalmers, that's the same guy. He's got the same name as someone from Geordie Shore. And I thought, nah, that can't be right. I had a little dig, and it happened to be. But, we're three fights in now. Three or four. This is our fourth one, maybe.
He's 4-0 at the moment, so yeah. This will be your fourth one.
I came after the first fight, so this will be my fourth fight.
And Aaron's dropping weight in this one, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think he's going down to 70. Don't quote me. But I think
it is lightweight. I think he's going for the welterweight light, isn't he?
Yeah. But we've already made the necessary steps. Look, you know, as much stick as the guy gets, he's training and he's doing all of the same things that people like Nathaniel are doing. And he's got the right people around him. He's training with Tom Breeze. He's got Fabian Edwards as well. So he's doing his best. He's doing his thing, and he's dropping weight. You know, he's coming in the lightest I've seen him, and we're still 2 months out. So I have no doubt he should be on weight for sure.
Yeah, I think for Aaron, I think he probably knows this himself. He's always probably going to get an element of pushback because of where he came from, but that's just the nature of it. It's a double-edged sword coming in with a bit of fame.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's tough because that's quite a sensitive topic, isn't it, Chris? We've had many chats about this. You know, it's the same as the whole UFC cutting the flyweight division. It's either business or it's for the sport. And Aaron certainly brings a lot to the table in terms of business. And what do you do? What do you do when someone like that's putting bums on seats and you know, making those numbers grow? So.
I think they've been very smart with Aaron, actually. They've not sort of done a CM Punk to him and thrown him to the wolves against, like, Mickey Gall. They're building him up slowly. And, like you said, he brings people to watch. So I think that's the best way to do it. What I tell you what, though, I would like to be a bit of a stir at you because, obviously, you work with Aaron. So now we've got James, who does the Bad Patter podcast with Chris Bungard. I know he's been calling for a fight with Aaron. How'd you see that one going, James? What's your thoughts on that fight happening?
Right, well, listen, look, just talking about right now, I don't think Aaron and Chris make sense for Aaron. It makes perfect sense for Chris. But I don't think it's a fight that's got to happen. But listen, I've interviewed Aaron, I've spoke to him, and I thought he was a nice guy. So me, I just don't see that fight happening. Doesn't make any sense. I don't think it's one that Bellator would make. And obviously Chris has got a big fight coming up in the same card myself. Although I will be a wee fly in the wall floating about down in Newcastle to see what happens when they bump into each other. But it's all Twitter stuff. I mean, it is what it is.
And let's be honest, you know, Aaron Chalmers is 4-0 against people who, you know, he didn't have an amateur career. He's fought against people who would have been commensurate with the level that he was at. You know, Bungard's, what, 14-4, 13-4, something like that. It's a hell of an experience difference. So, you know, Mario Saeed was calling out Aaron Chalmers. Lots and lots of fighters have called him out. And, yeah, from a business perspective, it makes perfect sense for them to do it. But for a promotion, it makes zero sense just to go and throw someone in with that little experience. Doesn't matter, you know, how talented the guy is, who he's training with. That cage experience will be vital when coming in against someone with, you know, the likes of Bungard's skill set.
Bungard's got Terry Breeze now, hasn't he, James? Is that correct?
Yeah, he does.
That's going to be a really good fight because I think that's actually a step up for Chris because obviously Terry, I think, is a two-weight champion in Bama. So he's got a lot of experience and I think that's going to be a really good fight and a big test for Chris. So I'm really looking forward to that fight, actually. There's a lot of good fights on that card in Newcastle.
Yeah, go on, James. No, go on, crack him.
What I was going to say, yeah, I'm really excited to hear about that fight. Terry obviously come off the win against Reese McKee. So he's coming in to a world champion. Perfect fight. Good name. And obviously getting in on a good card. Experience-wise, actually, I think Chris has got more experience. You've got to factor in. Chris Bungard had a very, very extensive amateur career as well. He's been a very active fighter. So, I like the fight. I think it's going to be a fun one. Both guys will be coming in ultra confident. Obviously, Terry coming in as a two-weight world champion as well. So, I think that card is shaping up to be a really good card the way it's looking. Let's hope everything stays as is.
Yeah, we were speaking last week as well about do we think Cage Warriors is going to be worried about competition from Bellator, and we all kind of said no. We thought they're in a different category. But looking at that card they've put on, I mean that. I actually think they will be sort of looking over their shoulder a bit of that now because that is a really strong domestic card. And like you said, I think that would rival a lot of cards that Cage Warriors can put on. I know the last card Cage Warriors put on was insane, but how many of them are you going to be able to do, you know?
Here's where Cage Warriors do need to be conscious as well because a lot of this comes down to fighter pay. and let's not get it twisted. Bellator pays more. So and I don't think it's just a small amount more. I think it's a considerable amount more. And Cage Warriors are a fantastic promotion, and they're a great gateway into the UFC. But there's a lot of guys looking at Bellator and thinking Bellator may be the better direction in the UFC at the moment. Mm. So from that point of view, yeah, they probably should be a bit worried.
And a few fighters gone over as well. Grayson, Janzamini's gone over as well. So there's quite a few Cage Warriors fighters who've actually gone on to that. Card. Liu Long as well is another Cage Warriors fighter who's gone to Bellator.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's prize fighting. And the guys aren't out there wanting to fight for nothing. The guys are looking to support families and make money. This is a hard business to make money in for fighters. And if they can go somewhere like Bellator, potentially make life-changing money, that's the avenue a lot of guys are going to take. So time will tell. I think Bellator are looking good. I like what Bellator are doing, and I like the fact I think they're going to put a lot of European shows. So it means some 35-year-old who can't stay up past 1 a.m. can actually watch fights at a reasonable time.
Well, you've got a couple of guys on Bellator yourself, haven't you, Ennis? Obviously, we talked about Aaron Chalmers, but Fabian Edwards as well, making the move from Bama to Bellator was quite a seismic shift, really. People were talking about Fabian joining his brother Leon in the UFC, and he decided to follow his own route. So as Fabian's nutritionist, you know, Fabian's always fought at middleweight. Now, I've spent time with Fabian. He's, you know, he's a big guy, but there's big and there's middleweight big. Do you think that middleweight's going to be his long-term home, or do you think that if you started talking to him about welterweight, can you exclusively reveal anything here?
I can definitely tell you welterweight's off the card. The guy likes food too much. The welterweight's just not on the card, I don't think, for Fabian. I mean, he hits like a truck as well. So honestly, I think he could sit at middleweight and potentially in a few years, if he wanted to, move up. I don't think he needs to cut weight. Certainly not. I don't know if you've seen any pictures of him lately. He's looking like he's gained a couple of pounds.
he's looking like John Jones on his first comeback, wasn't he? He's looking ripped. And I love the videos he's releasing of him. Just that 20, 30 second snippets of him training. He's looking really sharp.
No, exactly. I mean, Fabian's, me and you have spoken a lot about Fabian before, Chris. I know that you rate him as well. He's got a lot of potential. And he's still young. He's still fairly young. The guy's got a lot to offer. And I think if anything, he could move up weight. So, no, I don't think welterweight is ever going to be an option. I think he could be if he really wanted to. But like I said, he just likes food too much.
it's West Indian blood in him.
He's a great addition to middleweight for Bellator as well.
Mm. That Chadwick fight looks great as well.
Yeah,
because that's another one he's come across from Cage Warriors, Lee Chadwick.
Yeah,
fighting Fabian Edwards,
former champion as well.
Mm. Yeah, who's had weight issues actually, Ennis.
Yeah. I saw his post.
Well, going back to you then. So, what's next for you then? So, you've made a very firm footprint in the MMA sphere. What are you doing next?
In the new year, I'm going to be doing some live shows. So, we're going to be doing the Mr. Sport Expo, which is basically a live show discussing fat loss, fads, misconceptions to do with health and fitness and weight loss. And there will be the element of weight cutting as well. So obviously a large majority of my clientele and following are MMA based. So, you know, we're going to have some units of we're going to be dropping some knowledge bombs in there as well in the seminars for the, you know, certainly for the fighters and the coaches. So that's one thing. But I also have a rehydration drink coming out as well, which is hopefully going to make rehydrating for the sport of MMA a lot safer. I personally know going to the shop for some of these fighters, you end up spending 15, 20 pounds on all the stuff that contains the necessary electrolytes. And half of the powders that are out there as well aren't really up to scratch. So it's been a year in the making, but I finally sort of formulated a powder and we've gone through trials and whatnot, flavor testing and all of that rubbish that comes with creating a product. And in January it's going to be released. So we're hoping it's going to work out well. I know Nathaniel will have the first batch of that product, and he'll be using that to refuel. So fingers crossed, no pressure. Hopefully that turns him into He-Man or something.
I hope it passes the USADA check.
What's that, sorry?
I hope it passes the USADA check.
It has. It will. Honestly, you don't want to see...
No, take the supplements here, Yanis.
Some of these USB boxes. This is... And it gets changed every... It gets changed quarterly, something like that. You end up getting a new document with 5 pages of banned substances and things that could be classed as a banned substance. It's quite... It's quite a thing. It's quite a book. It's quite a girthy book.
It sounded like Murdad talking about that. Excellent. Okay, well, Frankie, have we got any questions that are coming for Yanis?
Yep, there's a couple. Chris Gadden again is asking, please explain for the casual fan the difference between diet and cut.
Yeah, so diet is, when you're dieting, you're targeting fat, which fat loss is a reduction in calories. So basically, burn more than you consume, and that creates fat loss. Water loss, so cutting weight, is primarily water. So you won't be able to lose more than perhaps a pound or two of fat in a week, but fighters are able to drop sometimes 15, 20 pounds in a week on fight week. That's because they're drawing water out, which is a completely different process. Water isn't about the energy, the amount of calories you're eating. Water is about things like glycogen in the muscle, so carbohydrates, sugar, sodium, things like that. So yeah, the body almost takes more of a battering in water cutting because, like I said, you're drawing water out. You're dehydrating the brain, the kidneys. You're offsetting a lot of the electrolytes in your body. And then you've got to replenish them. Whereas with fat loss, it's just simply consuming fewer calories. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yep. Another one, Tommy Taylor. What's the biggest weight cut you've had to deal with a fighter during fight week?
maybe 20, 25 pounds.
Oof. This is a loaded question, though, because Tommy Taylor is fought at welterweight, and Tommy's just started. He's literally just signed up with Yanis. Now, I know that Tommy's sitting around light heavyweight at the moment, so Yanis has got a bit of work to do, but if you can get him back to welterweight, that kid is something special, honestly. On the ground, he's an absolute little wizard. So... if he could be one of your very good news stories, if you can work your magic with him.
That'd be great. I mean, he must have been asking that for a reason then.
That's why I laugh.
He's looking to take the crown, that's what it is.
Have you got any others, Frankie?
Frankie's gone. I've actually got a question I want to throw in there for Yanis as well, just when we were talking about fighters rehydrating. I know obviously IVs used to be the thing, but they're banned basically in the UFC now. How big a difference would an IV make if fighters were allowed to do it? Do you feel it would help them more than naturally rehydrating? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, I understand why it's an issue, because IV, allowing IVs to take place is almost like allowing anyone to walk into an airport without being checked. It's, you know, you're relying a lot on trust. And I think there are certain people that might abuse that system. The thing with an IV, though, is it's a more effective and it's a more efficient way of rehydrating, because when you're doing it orally, so you're drinking water, you know, you're taking water orally, you're not injecting it. Yeah. You can only take up to about a litre an hour, maybe. So any more than that tends to be just flushed straight out. You just piss it out, basically. So it shortens the amount you can do in a certain time period. Whereas with an IV, essentially what you could do in maybe 4, 5, 6 hours orally.
That was a wrong move.
Orally. I was going to throw this back, orally.
Turned into a cam show for just a wee minute there.
it's more efficient, because like I said, you can't consume. Consuming water isn't going to be as effective as, you know,
Yeah, perfect.
What's your views on IVs? Do you think that they should be banned?
Regulated, not banned. I wouldn't know. Don't ask me how. I'm not sure, but I think it makes things safer. It's safer. I mean, what would you do if you was in the army and you was, if you was dehydrated, the first thing they'd do is put you on, you know, if you was in combat, the first thing they'd do is put you on an IV. If you turned up to the hospital dehydrated, the first thing they'd do is put you on a drip. Yet with our fighters, we've banned that and we're almost saying, well, no, now you've got to, you know, certainly have cut 20 pounds. Now, all of a sudden, you mate, you have to drink like 15 litres if you want to replace those fluids. It's just, you know, it's impractical.
Can I just jump on that? And just with regards to the UFC, obviously, they're a massive company and fighter safety has to be at the top of the list. I don't understand why, in terms of regulation, why there isn't a UFC doctor after guys have made weight, checking them and administering the IVs themselves. It doesn't need to be, it should be somebody through the UFC that administers the IVs. Then that way, surely there's no risk of cheating if it's the UFC applying it. I know it would cost them money and that's probably why they don't do it, but I don't understand why they don't do it that way.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. But I think that's something that could happen in the future. For sure. I mean, as the sport of MMA, I don't know if it will ever get fully regulated. But I think that's something they can, they should definitely look to do.
Would you say as well, Yanis, let's speak in this hypothetical world, that if the UFC did do that, potentially what we're going to see is a better product in the cage?
Yeah. I mean, this is something, Chris, do you remember the article, the very first article you had written? Was an interview actually, wasn't it? And we basically said, if the UFC hired, for example, nutritionists or like you said, someone that could come along and you know give these IVs a doctor, someone that's qualified, you'd have less dropouts, so you'd have less failed cards, you'd have better performance, the fans would be happy. You know, it just all round would probably be a lot better. You'd have fighters that are able to probably fight, well, maybe more often, obviously, depending on the damage they take. But half of these fighters still now in the sport, even at the top, the pinnacle, you know, the UFC, they're going in dehydrated. They're fighting with dehydrated brains, you know. And when you're cutting a considerable amount of weight five times a year, you're damaging your kidneys. And that's, you know, across 5 to 10 years of a career, that's guaranteed damage in the future, like guaranteed. So it's something that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So welcome back, Frankie.
Yep, my phone died.
Oh, Frankie, come on. That's
an iPhone. Great. I don't have one of the adapters for the phones and the... I had it charged. It was like 80% before I started, and because it's on the video call.
Drink. It does burn battery doing this, I will say that.
Well, do we have anything else?
It's the best decision he's made, Conor McGinnis, and they're on track for February 23rd.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah, Tommy is fighting, actually, February 23rd on Golden Ticket Fight Promotions. He released that recently, so it'll be great to see Tommy back in the cage.
Sure.
Can I just jump in? Have you got another question?
No, there's none for Yanis. I was just going to go through.
I'll just jump in and say for Yanis, from a different perspective, I actually signed up to Mr. Sport because I was intrigued. I liked his live videos, and I can sort of confirm through the stuff I've been sent for email. It's very, very easy to follow. I think he breaks it down well. It's kind of showed me some mistakes I was making in my diet. Well,
you're on my plan.
I am on your plan. Yeah.
What? When? When did you join? No way.
About a week or so ago, about maybe 10 days ago. So I joined the plan. It wasn't some move because I knew we were going to do this. I just, like I said, I'd seen your stuff and I wanted to try it out. I've tried a couple of different things in the past, and I realised I've made some big mistakes in my diet. Probably pizzas on a Friday night was the first one. But yeah, so the meal plans, all that sort of stuff, it's very easy to follow, and it's sort of, sometimes with diet stuff, I mean, it's your mind starts spinning when you got all the information. trying to work out what's good, what's bad, and I quite liked the way everything was put across, and it's definitely working, because I'm down a couple of kilos. So
nice, man, I appreciate that.
No, no problem. Excellent.
So, Frankie, do we have anything more?
There's no more questions for Yanis. There's a few more just general questions, if you want them.
Go on then, let's chuck out a couple of quick ones.
James Price is asking what amateurs turning pro in 2019 should people watch out for?
Oh, okay. I've got two straight away off the top of my head that I can answer. First of all, Corey Belden. So, you know, obviously I go to Battle Arena a lot, which is James Price's show. Corey was, he's now the European and world champion at both welter and lightweight. The kid's 22, from Coventry. Each fight he's had, he's been progressively more difficult. And his last fight, he's fighting against a Norwegian, Patrick, whose guy's surname I can't pronounce for the life of me. Huge Norwegian for lightweight. And Patrick hit him with a head kick, maybe 20 seconds into the first round. And Corey drops, you know, unless he fell backwards, I don't know whether he regained consciousness, he was falling, whether he just about managed to stay conscious. Throughout probably two or three of the rounds, he was in trouble, and his toughness kept him in there. And then you could see him just suddenly come back to life in the third or fourth round. Won the European title to go with his world title as well. And he's turning pro now at lightweight. And then there's Matty James, another Battle Arena guy. He won the Battle Arena featherweight title actually at the last event. Kidderminster based, so trains alongside my guy David Kelser, the guy who fought on Bama, who's one of Yanis's clients. Matty James, Corey Belden, certainly two people to look out for going into 2019. Guys, have you got any to add?
Yeah, I got some good ones. First one, I got lucky enough to see the Cage Warriors Grand Prix play out, which was obviously all amateurs. The first one I would give a shout out was Oban Elliott. He's a welterweight that's going to be turning pro in 2019. He's going to be going to lightweight, and the guy is just an absolute beast. I think he's 7-0 as an amateur. He absolutely tore through everyone else in a light welterweight tournament. All stoppages, all knockouts. I think all of his fights have actually been knockouts, so he's an animal. He trains with Nadine Armani in Bristol, but he also goes around. He goes down to Chris Reese Academy. He goes to Tulare Combat. He really puts in the work, and he's dropping onto lightweight next year, and he's going to be a really big prospect, I think.
He's exciting. Yeah, I've seen him. He's super talented, that kid.
We also got, from Tulare Combat, you've got Jordan Peake, who's a lightweight. He got lost in the final, but he's very, very good. And he's going to be dropping out of featherweight. So he's going to be another one to watch out for. And the other one I was going to say was a guy who trains with Paddy Pimlet, Nathan Fletcher. Really, really good fighter. So that's my three. And he also won the Grand Prix. So, yeah, some really good guys there. And, I think that was a really big success in bringing on amateurs, that Cage Warriors Grand Prix. So a lot of good guys coming out there, to be honest.
Is Nathan Fletcher Welsh?
No, he's a Scouser. He's from Liverpool.
Oh, excellent. So you've got an English one in there as well. I was going to say, to be fair, but Tulare Combat, I've got some amazing people coming out of there. It's a real hotbed of talent there. So.
Very good. Excellent. Guys, yeah.
And James, you've got any up in Scotland?
I've got a few guys now. I'm not saying they're turning pro, but they're amateurs at the moment. I think a couple of them will probably see it pro next year. First one that springs to mind is Mark Goon. Mark's been on a tear at the moment. He's on a 5-fight win streak, 5 finishes. Recently just fought down in England, Evolution of Combat. Another finish down there. I think we may see him turning pro sooner rather than later. Keir Harvey's teammate, he just actually turned pro as well. Again, fought in the same show, got a win. Another guy that we've got really high hopes for up here is Rhys McEwen. I'm not sure when he's going to turn pro. I think he wants to keep testing the water with some K1 fights as well. And I'll give you a young guy who's only had one amateur fight, but he's, mark my words, this guy's going to be something. Kid at a higher level. I think he's 16, around about that. He's very young. Sean Clancy Jr. Keep your eyes out for him. I think he just got awarded the most improved fighter at a higher level. And that's saying something. That's one of the top gyms in Scotland. So not necessarily guys turning pro, but they're only ones that spring to mind now that I would keep an eye out on. But Sean Clancy, that's somebody to watch for the future.
Excellent. That's a great question. Thanks for that, James.
Tom's asking as well, leading us into the next one. Which country has the richest talent pool at the moment? Scotland, England, Wales or Ireland?
Lewis, what do you think?
I don't want to be biased, but I think Wales.
Okay.
What's that?
Edward, you've been smoking.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
So I was just wondering how the Welsh got on against the Scots at the last Cage Warriors event.
Can I just say, last Cage Warriors, if we go back and watch the video, my pick rate, I think, was 100%.
Yeah, that's true.
I think mine was
1%. So whenever you want to take a bet, if I don't ever follow me, because I'm awful at it. Yanis, what do you think? You work with the fighters. So, best talent pool.
I mean, it's... I think if you're saying single fighters, you could go with someone like somewhere like Wales or Scotland, for example. But I think if you're saying across the board, probably England, just because of the sheer depth we have. You know, we've got London-based fighters. You've got the gyms over in Liverpool. You've got Renegade in Birmingham. I think just across the board, we've probably got more. And you've got down south as well. If you look at like Phoenix, MMA with Southampton and Bournemouth,
one in Portsmouth.
So I'm not sure. I don't know.
And so Frankie and James, I'm guessing you might be leaning towards Scotland. Would we say that?
I'm going to be completely honest. I'm not leaning towards Scotland. Right now is a good time in UK and Irish MMA, in my opinion. England just have far more gyms, far more fighters.
Yeah,
that's just a bit as Scotland has got a fantastic scene going on at the moment, and I think we've got a lot of talented guys up here. Exact same with Welsh MMA and Irish, exact same thing. Right now, I just think sheer number wise, there's more fights in England. There's more gyms. There's more fighters. It just means that there's probably going to be a bit more talent, and that's what it comes down to. It comes down to a volume thing.
The thing is, as well, though, they're competing against each other, so I think it's one of those things that it all helps each other, doesn't it? You know, if you're a Welsh gym, you're fighting against a lot of English gyms, so, and if you're a Scottish gym, you're fighting against a lot of English gyms, so it all kind of helps each other. And I think overall, UK MMA really is developing at a rapid rate at the minute, and it's brilliant to see people like us who get to come and talk about it.
I know. I couldn't agree more. I think it's a good question, but I think there's talent everywhere. It's a good. I would just class it as UK MMA. Obviously, we all have our specific things we cover. With me up in Scotland, Lewis down in Wales. Obviously, Chris, you're out in England. But it's a good. The fact that we all think maybe we're Scotland's strongest, Wales, that's a good thing. That's just overall tells you UK MMA. Out with some dodgy shows around, is in a very, very good place. And the fact Bellator's signed so many fighters over here tells you quite a lot.
Excellent. Great question there, Tommy. Okay, we'll have one more, Frankie, and then we're going to have to wrap it up.
I think that's it. There's not many more questions.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Even better then.
That's
brilliant. Nice. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys. I think it's been a fun show. I'll be honest, I've been absolutely bricking it because I've never presented a podcast before. Up until 2 weeks ago, I'd been on one football podcast, and that was it in my entire podcast history. So to actually be presenting it and taking over the mantle from the dulcet tones of Lewis Smith, it's been fun. I think I'll probably pass it back to you next week, though, buddy. I want to say, first of all, a huge thank you to Yanis Fleming for coming on. As I said, you know, we know you've got a busy schedule at the moment. You've got a lot of things going on. So for you to take the time out to join us is very much appreciated. And to pass on that knowledge is great. So, you know, if we start off with you, if you can give us your plugs, all your social medias, everything that you want to plug now, hit us with it.
Sure thing. I mean, thank you, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. So if you want to check out any of my content, my handle for all of it, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, is at Mr. Sport Official. And my website's just mrsport.org. But yeah, thanks again, guys, for inviting me on. It's been a pleasure chatting to you all.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Lewis, give us your tags.
So for me, my Twitter is Lewis_MMAUK. I think my Instagram is lsmith6, so give me a follow on there. And yeah, Chris, awesome for you to host tonight, buddy. I thought you did real well. And definitely going to do it again in the future. And obviously, Yanis, it was great speaking to you as well and learning, getting a bit of knowledge off you, mate. So thanks for coming on.
Likewise, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. And then our podcast expert, the guy who does the Bad Patter podcast, Mr. James Hamilton.
Expert's a bit strong, mate. Expert's a bit strong. Don't raise people's expectations.
No, with the
headphones. With the Jedi headphone. Actually, it looks a little bit like R2-D2, doesn't it? Is that...
It's not the best.
Assholes.
give us your tag, James.
So it's Twitter, James MMA UK. Listen, my Twitter and Instagram are shit, man. Just don't bother following them. It's pointless. You get all the stuff I do on MMA UK anyway. So on that page, at least then you'll get something decent with some good fighters and stuff like that. And the Bad Patter podcast will be back at the start of 2019. We've got some fun guests coming up. So catch us on Twitter and you'll get us on all the usual spots, iTunes and obviously MMA UK, that show goes out live, so probably better following that than following my personal accounts because, like I said, they're pretty shit. But
great plug, guys. Don't bother following me.
Just being honest, mate, my Twitter and Instagram are utter gash, honestly. We've got a couple of decent pictures if I'm going to an event, but apart from that, it's pretty boring.
Last and certainly not me, by no means least, Frankie.
Just follow me at the MMA UK pages. We are MMA UK on Twitter, Instagram, and the Facebook page. Obviously, just search MMA UK.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to plug my stuff, obviously. It's at battlereadyam.com for my website. On Twitter, I'm at Chris_BRAM_. On Instagram, I am at Battle Ready because that's my management company. And all those young fighters, all the ones that Lewis said, all the ones that Frankie said, all the ones that James said, you know, when you're looking for management, definitely come to me. I've been taking names of them. So, but no, guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you to Mr. Scadden, to Tommy Taylor for your comments. Murdad, I saw your comment. I will get you the next time I see you. My friend Simon Jones, Chupamelos. Thank you very much, guys. Good night.
Cheers, boys.